Uninvited guests. His heart was pounding. He was sure he had seen the doorknob turn. Uninvited Guests by Jules Feiffer. Henry was startled, but not that surprised by the appearance of a singing mouse in his studio. After all, he was a children's book writer and illustrator. He'd been writing and drawing stories about talking and singing mice, bears, pigs, ducks, dogs, cats, mules, donkeys, elephants, foxes, sharks, whales, eagles, and owls, as well as chattering flowers, chairs, tables, and once an entire avenue of three-bedroom houses that wouldn't keep still. It was his own three-bedroom house in which the singing mouse displayed itself to Henry. The event occurred sometime after his wife had taken his two boys off on vacation, a vacation that had now lasted over a year, complaining that she could no longer stand living in this house, stacked with children's paraphernalia long after their own two boys had reached adolescence, cramped with odds and ends that began as research for his picture books and ended up as living room decor, bedroom flotsam, kitchen gewgaws, and bathroom clutter. Building blocks of all colors rising to the ceiling. Toy cars of different makes and sizes. Three sets of toy trains crossing back and forth in all of the upstairs rooms. Bedrooms, bathrooms, and Henry's studio. Stuffed animals, including a life-size elephant, a hippopotamus, a camel, and a zebra. Stuffed life-size dolls based on animal characters that Henry had created so many years ago, he couldn't remember their names. And most irritating of all to his wife, Wilma, the artifact that drove her to leave the house and never return until Henry did something about it, which he refused to do, was the 150-foot-long boa constrictor, so real-looking that it frightened his wife and disturbed the dreams of his teenage boys. The snake, 4 inches in diameter and dyed in incandescent colors, ran from Henry's studio upstairs, downstairs into the living room, across to the kitchen, and down into the cellar, where its head came to rest against a tiny oak door in the stone basement wall that Henry had tried but had never been able to open. Behind the door, Henry smelled chicken soup. His wife's last act before driving off with the children was to take the axe Henry used to chop firewood and make piecemeal out of all 150 feet of stuffed boa constrictor, from its head in the basement cellar to its tail in Henry's studio. Then she gathered her sons in the family station wagon and took off on their permanent vacation. Henry regretted their departure, but not quite as much as the passing of his favorite boa, who now, 15 months after his dismemberment, reappeared whole again in fine fettle, curled comfily around the talking mouse. The two of them singing an off-key but exuberant version of Puff the Magic Dragon. Henry viewed this apparition with equanimity. He had been living inside his head for so long that he was comfortable with the ridiculous and completely at ease with the absurd. Incoherence shaped the day-to-day state of his mind, a fact of life that had upset his family but felt absolutely right to Henry. He loved what didn't fit, didn't make sense, wasn't efficient, structured, or orderly. He distrusted order. His mind was a mess, his graying hair uncut and uncombed, a messy growth that hid a messier mind. His implausible brain delighted in the unlikely sight and sound that had taken up residence in his studio. These two creatures, a perfect match for the imaginings of a children's book author and illustrator who were harmonizing favorite songs from Henry's childhood, moving on from Puff the Magic Dragon to Zippity-Doo-Dah and then to Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. "Who are you?" Henry demanded, and then corrected himself. I know very well who you are. Monty the Mouse from my first book, The Mouse Who Ate Caviar, and Bobo the Boa from Mr. Snake Goes to Town, one of my worst books. Maybe one of the worst picture books ever written. Why have you come back to sing for me? What is it you are trying to convey by singing my childhood favorites?
Are you going to sing,
hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off to work we go? Please don't. Is there some hidden meaning to your weird and mysterious appearance? A message, perhaps? Please tell me you didn't come here with a message. I despise messages. I have never written a book with a message. My whole life has been in pursuit of an existence without messages, without well-meaning advice, without improving my mind, without meeting and fleeing from that which is good for me, will change me for the better, convert me, inspire me. I wish for nothing but to be left to myself and my characters, of which you are two, but certainly not my most successful two. What does it mean? Wait, I take it back. I don't want to know what anything means. I only care about silliness, goofiness, slapstick, and childhood before the age of 7 1/2. And I smell smoke. Why do I smell smoke? Is that another illusion? But no, sadly not. Henry looked away from the Singing Mouse and Boa to see that his studio had caught fire. The candle he lit every morning at 7 a.m. when he entered his studio to work. The candle that set his mood to his happy past. The games and play and running around he remembered from childhood. That burning candle had somehow come in contact with sketches Henry had tossed aside earlier. Apparently, he'd tossed them into the lit candle, which ignited the sketch paper and set his studio on fire. Henry might have noticed the fire early enough to do something about it, except for the distraction of the Singing Mouse and Boa Constrictor, who were now leading him out of the smoke-filled studio as they sang and danced their way downstairs to "Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream." Henry could not see that well anymore. The smoke was thick, the smell was sickening, and he could not think. Well, he could never think. He didn't try to call for help or contain the fire. He didn't believe that to be appropriate behavior. What he deemed appropriate was to follow the singing and dancing creatures of his own invention to wherever they led him. And why not? He had spent half a lifetime directing creatures he had made up into hapless and hilarious situations. Why shouldn't they turn the tables, and what better time than now? He was old, and getting older by the minute, and had been abandoned by his family. Or had he abandoned them? Now was not the time to resolve the question. Because now, Henry's universe was burning. Like Henry's picture book of 15 years ago, the firehouse fire in which feckless firefighters, dogs and cats, got in one another's way as they battled the blaze that would have consumed their firehouse if not for the good luck of a sudden monsoon that flooded the premises. The firehouse sailed away in a gumbo of helplessly confused fire animals. But no monsoon was on the way to save Henry's house. It was about to burn to the ground with Henry in it. Unless this mouse and Boa had a plan. Henry had no plan. Not a single thought in his head except to follow the singing animals that he'd given life to and on whom he was now depending for his rescue. As the mouse hopped and the Boa slithered downstairs to the main floor, they waded into a rousing chorus of, "Come on, baby, light my fire." Henry didn't hear, wasn't listening. None of this was to his liking. He had moved into this house specifically to avoid the intrusion of life into fantasy. over the years, he had endured more than enough forced and unwanted choices, heaped upon more unwanted choices, leading to even more unintended unwanted choices, finished with choices. Except what story to tell, what animal to focus on, what twist of overworked, long-favored surprise endings to spring on his young readers. And after that, what brush to apply with which color to what quality of paper? His work, that and that alone, had become his life. So he was in no mind to deal with a house burning down around him. If choices had to be made, Henry trusted the mouse and the boa to make them. But where were they all headed now? As the smoke thickened and began to trail Henry, the mouse, and the boa downstairs, the cellar door swung open, and down into its dark, cool depths, Henry descended. No smoke yet. In fact, cool, still calmly cool, as if in defiance of all that was burning above. The cellar door blew shut behind Henry and his creatures, leaving them in darkness. A single shaft of light eased only slightly Henry's wariness of the darkened, hulking shapes and forbidding silhouettes that were everywhere before him. In the far wall, lit by the glow cast from the window, Henry was able to make out the tiny door that he had never been able to pry open. It was toward this door that he saw the mouse and the boa heading. And then they were at the door and gone. Through, under, or over the door. "Wait," cried Henry. "What do I do now?" A voice behind the door yelled, "Is that you, Henry?" He recognized it immediately. It was the voice of Lena the lioness, the way she sounded in his imagination when he wrote and drew his bestseller, A Lioness in Summer.
"Well, I must say it took you long enough,"
came a second voice, familiar from the months spent making up lines inside his head. It was Wesley Worm, the hero of his popular picture book, The Worm Returns. All of these voices, dozens now jabbering, mixed with animal sounds, oinking, quacking, barking, meowing, honking, mooing, an entire menagerie shouted as they quacked and meowed and mooed,
"Henry!
It's Henry! About time, Henry!"
Henry coughed. Smoke had begun to seep in from upstairs. It curled under the cellar door. But it was that other door, the tiny mystery door that held Henry's attention. It seemed to grow brighter as the smoke advanced.
"Good heavens," Henry said aloud. "There's a message here."
He clapped his hands at the joy of self-discovery.
"What I've tried to avoid my entire working life. And look what I've done."
He took a further, careful step downstairs.
"I've set a trap for myself, and I'm walking right into it."
He clapped his hands twice now, as if in applause for the conclusion he was reaching.
"I made this whole thing up to conceal the obvious, that I'm dying.
I have constructed a clever little story laced with all my skills of fantasy and misdirection to bring me to this door and to deliver the message that I could not accept in any other form. I have turned my death into a children's story.
Oh, I am a much better writer than I ever imagined."
Feeling an excitement he hadn't known since he was a little boy, Henry descended the last of the steps, nervously advancing toward his port of entry. His heart was pounding. He was sure he had seen the doorknob turn.